It's my pleasure today to be sitting in the sunshine in the square of Solier talking to Lynn Gaydosh, or Mary Lynn, depends from which of her various manifestations you know her. And we are accompanied today in the middle of Solier Square by a school group who are giving us a bit of singing along the way. And it's always a pleasure to be part of the ambience of the city of Solier. Lynn, welcome to Boat Radio.
Dong, ding, dong. It's a pleasure. The pleasure's all mine. Thanks very much, Shirley. And nice to meet you, Mike.
Well, we're going to talk today because you have a story and a half. You are here and you represent music in so many forms on this island.
Yeah.
But you didn't rock up here just 5 minutes ago. It's a long old time. So tell us how you ever found this place in the universe from, I believe, Ohio.
Yeah, that's all the way from Ohio, then on to Berklee College of Music in Boston, Massachusetts, which made me fall in love with someone from San Francisco. So I moved to San Francisco, met over the years a crazy Irishman who, playing darts and drinking Guinness, told me, let's go hitchhike in Europe. I said, sure. That was 1987. I was a waitress, earning a lot of money.
Were you working as a waitress tips. As a cocktail bar?
No, but they were $100 tips sometimes.
Wow.
So I had a lot of money, which I spent very quickly on a party. And basically, anyway, long story short, I started hitchhiking in 1987 on my own. And met up with a friend sometime later, a few months later, who said she had friends in Soler, Mallorca. We were in Madrid, bored out of our skin. It was Madrid in August. It was closed, and well, it didn't open until 11 o'clock at night, Madrid. So we got out a map. Neither one of us knew anything about Spain or Spanish geography. I said, oh, look, Soler is on an island called Mallorca. So she flew us here. By the way, she flew us everywhere. She was a millionaire's daughter.
And what, we arrived. Did you arrive on a private plane?
No, but she paid for everything. She had 10 Gucci suitcases. I had my backpack. And as we were coming in on the Soler train, I felt my whole being flip. It was just like I was gloriously turned inside out. I began breathing differently. It was immediate. No sooner did we come through that first tunnel, and I felt like I was home. Something inside of me changed. I mean, it was absolutely, I was born again. And we got off that train, and we came here to the plaza, pretty much right here,
right
where we're sitting
here,
now.
Right where we're now, yeah.
And someone said, one of you should meet that boy over there. I can't say his name. he's practicing his English. He's really nice. He gets along great with the people you'll be staying with. I ended up marrying him.
Really?
Met the man, my future ex-husband,
on the
five minutes after getting off the train.
Serendipity.
We're still friends, and two marriages later. I'm married to Soler. I'm in love with this island, with this town. This is where my heart is. Unfortunately separated from my family, but I guess there's a big reason why because I'm still here. I've never left Soler.
Never left.
Since 1987, no.
So in that time, it's a long old time now, then you were creating a life for yourself in where your brain was going. So if we go back to where it started in the Berklee College of Music, what were you going to do with your music? Was that going to be your life?
Yeah, I was going to be in musical theater, which was my first love. I didn't really imagine myself with a career in rock, although that's where everything took me. I was a rock student at a jazz university. Got the first 10 in 10 years that anyone received in my performance, I believe, because personally I think it's because I sang three country songs instead of a Sarah Vaughan jazz, you know, recital. And that's basically where I began waking up, because I was from a very small town in Ohio where there was one black guy, there was one Catholic girl, there was a Mormon girl, there was a Mormon family, and that was all very strange to us. Boom, small town, rural Ohio to Boston, Massachusetts, jazz university, lots of substances floating around that university, and I met my first people from all over the world. And they were musicians, and they were intellects, and they were atheists, and they were Jewish, and they were from everywhere. And so I began waking up out of my little small town, Ohio. Love going back there, but I couldn't live there anymore. Never. But here I am again in a small town with 65 nationalities. So I'm so proud to live here. I'm so thrilled.
So your experience in life really has been small town Ohio base, and then when you relocated and came here, this is, you could say, small town Sawyer. So the difference, there must be a very big difference for you in small town.
Huge difference, because coming from small town rural farmland Ohio, the people there only know about where they are, and leaving the county or crossing over the state line is a big deal. Things don't change, which is kind of nice. You know, I wrote a song about that called My Old Town. But here in Sawyer, we've got 65 nationalities, anywhere between 60 and 65 nationalities. People visit here. Now, of course, having said that, we think it's quite international. I have an English student, she's 18 years old, and I said, do you ever speak English with anyone in Sawyer? And she said, no. I said, do you know anyone who speaks English in Sawyer? She said, no. Amazing. 18 years old. Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. Now, having said that, until I separated, I never spoke English more than once or twice a week. I didn't have English friends or German friends, or I was completely Mallorquin. I was in the Mallorquin dance group. All my friends were Mallorquin. I hung out with Mallorquins. I spoke Mallorquin every day on a 20-hour basis, and I spoke English occasionally at my school and at my concerts. I mean, it's not like I didn't have any friends, but not many.
So did you get, at that point, involved in the Mallorquin music scene?
Well, I've never really been, you mean traditional Mallorquin music, because I danced in the group. No, I've never been really big on it. I support it because I think it's important to keep culture alive in all ways. But I basically wanted to be in the dance group because in the United States I studied dance and there was no place to dance. I had to dance, which basically I don't dance anymore. It's strange. I studied ballet and jazz. Right. Yeah, so long story short, I wouldn't have been a dancer or a strong musician. I think had I stayed in Ohio, I probably would have. I wouldn't have stayed in Ohio. I went to Boston and San Francisco. Yeah. I think right now I'd be in Colorado or Oregon or someplace where everything's legal and you're allowed to speak your mind.
And as far as your relationships here then, so, you know, on day one, we've met a local man at Mallorquin that took you into a whole new world.
Yes.
You didn't know the language.
No.
You didn't know the culture. You didn't even know anything about Spain or Sawyer, except that you've got your prickly feeling as you arrive. So what kind of love story is that? I mean, were you accepted right from the beginning?
Absolutely. He had arrived in Mallorca when he was two. His father and mother were shorter than I am, and this is how tall I am. Okay, so I'm not quite 5 feet tall.
Right.
They were small people who had been through a tremendous life, hard living in the Spanish countryside. They were from Mazarrón. He had been in a concentration camp.
Right.
Prisoner of war camp. She was so tiny. The funny story about her, this is my ex-husband's, who shall remain nameless. Mum once accidentally killed a bull with a slingshot protecting the sheep.
God, the slingshot. Yeah, the slingshots of Mallorca. Yeah.
So, the very first Christmas, we had Mallorquin friends over. a lot of sign language. But since no one spoke anything outside, only my Rakhine, I picked it up very, very quickly. Now, I had just taken some conversational French, 3 months of conversational French before I began hitchhiking in Europe to have something.
So you are, in fact, a great leveler as far as the change that's happened here over the last 30 years. You can chart its course completely.
Yeah.
So in your experience, if you take us through your music in that time, what started to happen as you became performing? Because now you're everywhere. Yeah. You're all over the place like a rash now, Lynn. I'm sorry.
Basically, I opened my mouth and sound came out. People started hearing me sing, and no one, of course, I was American. And the only woman anyone had seen, she was also American, she was black. There were very few women on the scene. There were none. There were maybe three women in the modern music scene in Mallorca.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to remember what it went. I'm sure I began with jazz, although it was a lot of kumbaya guitar playing, right. with camping groups and, you know, na-na-na-na. And basically people wanted to hear me sing. They would ask me to sing. Then someone asked me to join a band because they needed someone to record, and their singer was ill, not hitting the notes. And then when we were on stage, it was Catalan and English, and we were an original rock band. We flew. We were on top 40 radio. I was singing in front of 15,000 people. I could point at the moon and everyone, 20,000 people, would turn around and look at the moon.
So where were you doing this? In festivals?
In Hipódromo, it was circumstance. It was an awesome band at the right time. And this was when music was a lot bigger and we had a lot of work. We were well paid and we had concerts. There wasn't bar gigs, which is basically what we're left with because of the mafia here. Absolutely. You know me. You want me to bite my tongue? Tell me to now.
No, sure.
So people basically then began asking me for classes. I've had almost all of the most popular male singers and female singers. Concha Buico was one of my students. So it grew. And then my love for harmonies, as you well know, which we both share. brought me to other things. So I've been involved in many different musical projects. Fortunately, a lot of it original material, where songwriting is involved, which is wonderful. Then, of course, the harmonies make you feel that much more creative because you're looking for them and making them exist, where there was just air before that. Mm. Air and stillness, and you're creating harmony.
But this year, I mean, just watching this year, so we're in 2016, and you have had a very special year. I mean, tell us the story of all the musical things you've done so far this year.
This year, well, it hasn't been whirlwind, but it's been excellent. It's just not a lot of concerts, but beautiful concerts. The most exciting one for us as harmonizers, a cappella harmonizers, was the Torrente Paraíso. Like that for anyone who doesn't live here, I don't think they could get the honor and the absolute goosebumps that you are invited to sing at the Torrente Paraíso. Marroquín people love it. They go there. Everybody, it's a hard place to get to.
Yep.
You really have to want to go there, and thousands of people do because of the great, outstanding beauty of the place.
And the acoustics.
Yeah. So, one of my new guitar players, Diego. Okay, hi, Diego. It's okay. I'll call you later. Te llamo. Ciao.
Actually, we need to, because we have a worldwide audience here, we need to describe what the Torrente Paraíso is.
Okay, well, it shows up in different movies. If you haven't seen Cloud Atlas, which was filmed here, with Tom Hanks, Halle Berry, and Hugh Grant, and et cetera, et cetera. The very first scene where, I think it's Tom Hanks's mad doctor on the beach or something, that is the Torrente Paraíso. If you've ever seen that old movie of Jason and the Argonauts where they're fighting Lord knows not what skeletal creature, that is Torrente Paraíso. Torrente Paraíso shows up in several movies because of its incredible beauty. It's like you have the Pebble Beach and then you have these high, high, colorful cliffs rising over deep, deep, deep blue water. It's just the most amazing shade of blue. So It's color, it's high, high mountains, it's sandy, it's rocky, it's rugged, savage beauty. It is.
I mean, the whole area is a gorge, which is accessed really. Well, 99% of people get there. They get there on a boat because it's really very difficult drive. So from the port of Solia, for instance, people get on boats and they go to Sacalobra.
That's how we got there.
That's how you got there.
We sang on the boat.
Exactly. And so then in July there is this concert, which has been going now for, I would say, at least 60 years now. I think it's about 60 years. And so it is the high point of the summer in this area. So any visiting musicians or anybody that's asked to play this, they're reaching the top of their tree, Lynn.
Yes,
so you obviously really got the accolade of the year this year. And so this was you and your...
a cappella group, Aura Vows, which is our aura, as in your aura that surrounds your body. Vows is my routine for voices. Yeah, we were a little nervous. I was a little green from the boat, too. It was a rough ride. And I remember, I'm never nervous. I am never nervous, ever. I just love so much what I'm doing, and since I only do what I love, I don't need to be nervous. And there we were, and I was starting to get teary because Maria, my beloved best friend Maria, the soprano, was going to sing El Canto Orsays. I get teary just thinking about it. Later on, and I decided to open up with Amazing Grace because we came after a band. Basically, it was three women singers, but they had a drummer and a piano and a bass. So then we were a cappella, and I thought, now how can we just really make this a very clear? So I went, Amazing Great. And it was just like, ah. And I really had to pull myself together really quickly. And it took us about one or two songs to really breathe our way into it. And it was such an honor. If we never go back, we will always have that memory.
Yeah.
And very shortly after that, we weren't going to take that. You know, we were going to, we turned it down, but they didn't know. We were going to turn it down because we couldn't properly prepare for such an honor. And they never got the news. So we were on the program. They said they guaranteed us a position the following year. And we were so busy preparing for our new project, our new concert, which is also a big deal for us, that we almost didn't turn it the paraíso. But they never got the news that we had tried to get out of it because we wanted to prepare for it. So we really, really, really had an awesome July. Because the next thing was our brand new swing project.
Exactly.
If you can imagine, four-part harmonies with a swing band.
Yeah. I was there. I watched you and Dea doing just this.
So, plus my writing partner, Isaac Vega, we're writing. I'm finally writing with someone who I love what we do together. So my songwriting, my composing, and my lyrics writing are coming out, so that's coming out on little bit by bit by bit on YouTube and shares on Facebook. That's very important to me. It's the most personal side of who I am. And because of all of that as well, I'm going to Zaragoza. I'm invited to give a master class, which I prefer to call seminar. Someone else has just offered me something else. This is really an amazing year, Shirley. There must be some special planets up there for me.
It's all coming together.
Yeah, well, wow, at this age.
At this age? What age?
Well, that's all right. You don't need to know that. Oh, gosh, how many times have I been 40? Just a couple.
Tell me a bit about the country stuff you do as well.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm the big fan of the country, as we know.
Oh, that makes two of us. Crazy. Crazy for feeling. Well, as a matter of fact, we have a couple of links on YouTube. Delta Grooves is when we're quartet or with a drummer, and it's country, bluegrass, Delta Blues. We're just having fun with that. It's some of our originals, but a lot of covers because there's so much to choose from. Unfortunately, someone mentioned this to me in the plaza the other day. She said, well, you might not like the Trump voters, but they sure write some great music, don't they? Oh my God!
Well, the country, but yeah.
Some oh my God! So, anyways,
except the Dixie Chicks.
Absolutely,
we love the Dixie Chicks.
Absolutely, totally, totally. Big time five. Big time five. We are changing the way we do things. I am a huge, huge Dixie Chicks fan, but I'm fascinated with what this year is bringing, because there's, like you said, wow, that's a lot in a year. Plus, oh my gosh, the cathedral. And writing all those voices for that amazing... I sang in the middle of the Balearic... I didn't sing, I conducted in the middle of the Balearic Symphony Orchestra in the cathedral.
When?
Conducting the most amazing choir, which I wrote every single voice for.
Where was that?
Every single voice. Oh, my God. It was in September.
What was it called?
It was a wedding, but it was very top, top secret. You know, I still don't know who they were, Lindsay and Mark or somebody like that. I made up all kinds of things in my head, hoping she was a rock star or something. We still don't know who they were, but they were somebody. Yeah, I was called to create what doesn't exist, basically, an amazing choir, but not choir because it was all rock. It was U2, Peter Gabriel, Beach Boys, The Verve, Coldplay, and make these choral arrangements to be accompanied by the Balearic Symphony Orchestra. Not at all times, but also with a string quartet and then created out of the blue.
You wrote all that?
Oh, I didn't. I adapted all of that.
Yeah, you adapted the whole thing.
Yeah. Voice for voice by voice. So I brought all the studies, all my ear, everything that I could possibly have to pull out of my talent. I have had to do that this year.
I mean, this is just an amazing place to stop this interview because you are on a roll.
Yeah.
So the
no idea what's around the corner.
The adopted daughter of Solia.
Yeah. Thank you.
Minutes after arriving, speaking fluent Mallorquin, and just throwing in at the end of this interview, the fact that you've done a complete arrangement for celebrity guests in the middle of the Cathedral of Parma, where you've rewritten everything. I mean, are you hiding your talent under a bushel here?
Well, you know, I'm pretty vocal about everything, I think, except me. Yeah, I don't blow my own horn very, very often. No, I mean, I can, especially when I'm proud of my kids, proud of my students, proud of my band, proud of a song. But it's usually part of a group thing. My niece asked me to send her my best selfie. I said, I don't have any. I'm a groupie.
On that note. Okay.
Thank you so much, Shirley. Thank you so much, Mike.
Thank you very much. And but, you know, I need to ask you because, you know, somebody out there is really going to want to listen to your voice. What's your favorite song? What would you like to finish this interview on so that we can play you out?
So my favorite is a current original that's called Maggie and Faye, co-written with my partner Isaac Vega.
The pleasure has been all ours. So thank you very much for talking to Boat Radio.
Namaste. Namaste. Watching moon.
Our aim at Street Invest is to put a trustworthy adult into the lives of street children so that they can support them in creating the most positive paths for their lives in the future. We work around the world, working on the street with the children where they are. For such a large group of children, the amount of funding available is tiny. Really, the funding that keeps organisations like Street Invest going comes from individual donors. Street children are the most abused, neglected, violated children, yet they're also the most resourceful, responsive, and resilient children that we could have the honour of working with.
For more information or to make a donation, visit streetinvest.org.